So everywhere in the world today is the beginning of Kartik, except in Australia. What to do? In Vrindavan, now, Kartik has begun. And everywhere else, also. But we are one day later. Australia is different. But on the day before, it's a good day to begin some meditation on this month of Damodar, because it is a chance during this month to make special advancement. Especially whoever goes to Vrindavan during the month of Kartik is very fortunate, it is said, because in Vrindavan during Kartik one can make many times more advancement than under normal conditions. It says 1,000 times more. So, therefore, being in Kartik in Vrindavan is very, very, very special. Now, going to Kartik, going to Vrindavan, not all of us have the opportunity and the time to leave everything and to just go to Vrindavan. But one can at least go in consciousness. Because sometimes the acharyas, Jiva Goswami and his Sandarbhas, is pointing out that Vrindavan, or Mathura, he rather says, Mathura is not a place, he says it's a state of consciousness. So the consciousness of Mathura, or Vrindavan, is what really transports us there. Therefore, we can invoke that atmosphere also wherever we are. And in that way one can reside in Vrindavan by remembering Vrindavan. Because remembrance on the spiritual platform is as good as being there. When we simply remember the spiritual world. So it is a month to meditate on Krishna. So I'll read a few things about Kartik just to warm up the atmosphere. So in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, text 35, it is said that of months, of all the months, manasam margashirsha. So it is said of months, I am margashirsha, which is a name for November, December. So it is said that before Krishna, first Radha, Radha Krishna, Radha Shyam, Sitaram, like that. First the consort of the Lord is mentioned. Therefore the month of Kartik, which comes before this month of Margashirsa, is the month of Radharani. Right? Yes. So therefore, it is a month where we are meditating on pure devotional service. Because she is the proprietor of pure devotional service. No compromise at all. No self-interest whatsoever. Only the interest of Krishna in mind. And nothing but the interest of Krishna. That is pure devotional service. And that is found in Srimati Radharani. So this month of Kartik is that. Everyone who is ordinarily sort of compromised in his devotional service, in Kartik will try for pure devotional service. And in this month one can take vows. One can take vows to perform some special service. Because this month is the month of Srimati Radharani, she is especially noticing that service that we render. And when she recommends us to Krishna, then Krishna will also be inclined towards us. And she is very compassionate and soft-hearted. Therefore, this month is especially a very favorable time to try and attract mercy. And in that way, we are preparing for the month of Kartik. So, what special service can we offer? Srila Prabhupada speaks in the Nectar of Devotion about the power of performing devotional service during the month of Kartik. One of the most important of these ceremonial functions is called Urjavrata. Urjavrata is observed in the months of Kartik, October, November, especially in Vrindavan, Krishna's place of birth. There is a specific program for temple worship of the Lord in his Damodar form. Damodar refers to Krishna being bound with rope by his mother Yasoda. It is said just as Lord Damodar is very dear to his devotees, so the months known as Damodar or Kartik is also very dear to them. So this pastime of the binding of Krishna is interesting, because we remember that Yasoda was trying to tie up Krishna, and each time the rope was 2 fingers short. And she added more rope, still 2 fingers short. More rope, still 2 fingers short. No matter how much rope she brought, Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur said, she asked the neighbors for rope. She asked everyone in Vrindavan for more rope. And she's tying more and more rope. And in the end, it's just there was no more rope to be found in Vrindavan. And she was exhausted from running around and getting all that rope and tying it together. And when she was getting exhausted and perspiration, pearls of perspiration began to form on her forehead, at that time, Mother Yasoda reached sort of the limits of her endeavor. She took it really to the limits. And then Krishna's mercy made up. So 1 finger for the endeavor of Yasoda and 1 finger for the mercy of Krishna. And suddenly Krishna was bound. So if one wants to capture Krishna, there are these 2 elements. The endeavor from our side, which has to not just be half-hearted, no, one has to give everything. Not be half-baked potato, no. Complete, yes. Everything we have to give and sacrifice to Krishna, like that. That is actually the endeavor. So this month is a special month. It is the month for making a special endeavor. Beginning tomorrow. So tonight is our preparation, because if tomorrow you would have the either the biggest exam of the year, or you would have like a major contract to sign at work, right? Or you know, or do something technical, start up the new plant, right? Something, a very important day, then tonight you would not just party till 1 in the morning, would say, well, I'm going to have a good night's rest, because tomorrow I really got to perform tomorrow. So we would prepare. So therefore, it is now the right time to speak about Kartik. We take some vow. Sometimes devotees take vows of austerity, some vow of fasting. But those vows not so important. Krishna, for 1 month I will not eat sweets, but Krishna eats sweets also. So not eating sweets is not such an important vow. But for example, for 1 month to not criticize any devotee, that would be a vow. That would be something substantial. Or something else, somebody who has difficulty reading, right? Who just finds reading something difficult, can say, okay, in the month of Kartik, I will every day read one can choose something. I will every day read 1 chapter of the Gita, right? One can do. It takes effort, But if we say, okay, for this 1 month, I will do it every day. Such kind of vows are also favorable, because then by doing it after you've done for 1 month, then you think, well, maybe I should do it all the time. Actually, you develop some taste. I used to chant every day a chapter of Gita, Sanskrit and translations. It wasn't so long, 15 to 20 minutes, depending on the chapter. Chapter 2 is a little long. But if you have less time, then you do chapter 20. It's very fast. There's only 20 verses. So like that, there are long chapters, short chapters. Every day, I would chant one chapter. And after a while, we begin to memorize it automatically. If we regularly chant, like seventh chapter, I forgot a lot now, because, you know, I haven't practiced for a while, but I still know quite a bit. Maya Shakti Manaparta Yogi Unimatasraya Sansian Samagranam Yatavyatyasi Tatsuno Kyanantaham Savikyana Midam Bakshami Asesata Yatskyatvaniambu Yatskyatapam Asitisishate Manushanam Sahasrisu Kastityat Tasidaye Yatatama Pisidam Kasti Mamvitatapata Bumirapunga Yukaman Budre Chahangramiti and Binapakas Tada Aparimitastanyam prakatim vidime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yedam dayate jagat etat yunine bhutani sarvaniti upadare aham krishna si jagata prabhava pravayas tata. And like that, it can go on. And that is the result, not of me. See, I am not blessed this life with a very powerful memory, I tell you honestly. I forget everything, right? But if you chant something every day, after a while, it's just there. It's like very easy. Anybody, even if you... And that is the Vedic system, actually. Recitation. Even nowadays in India, you know, when there is some new house construction, a bhumi puja or something, some brahmana will recite the Gita, and you hear it over the loudspeaker all night. It's quite common, yeah? still, although it's very fast and you can hardly understand what he says, but anyway, something is there. But the text is still being chanted, and this is this recitation. So recitation of some verses could be nice. For the months. Other things we do, we can, of course, also at home, we must do that Urjavrata of every night offering the lamp to Damodar. Every night. I always do that, even when I'm traveling. If I have no lamp at all, I take matches and just offer the match, but somehow or other a flame I will offer, something. But of course at home one can make some giwiks, just make some giwiks and at night offer a little lamp. It is for 1 month, a simple thing we can do. Of course if along with that we can sing that bhajan, or if you can't sing it, play a tape. It's like in India, if you don't know the song, you just play the tape. In some temples in the morning, they play the tape, and then I think then they go back to sleep. I'm sorry. I don't know for sure. But, of course, best is if we sing ourselves. And we learn this song, this Dhamma. In the temple also, it will be chanted. So when we can go to the temple, that is very nice, because Radha Vallabha are there, but you cannot go every night to the temple, that's understandable. But somehow or other, that offering should be made every night. Devotees take special vows, vratas, to increase their spiritual practices. One activity they do during Kartik, which was given by Srila Sanatan Goswami, the principal architect of our Gaudiya Sampradaya, who was empowered by Lord Chaitanya, is to chant the 8 verses found in the Padma Purana, the Damodarastika prayers, and offer a ghee lamp and a candle. So these 8 verses are nice, and I will just quickly go through them for you. Not so much that I'm going to sing it now, because we save that for tomorrow, but I'll just go through the translation. Just a moment. It's electronic, so you always have to wait. It's amazing. There it is. Coming now. 7th page. The Supreme Lord, whose form is the embodiment of eternal existence, knowledge, and bliss, or Satsidananda Vigraha, that is Krishna, whose shark-shaped earrings are swinging to and fro, who is beautifully shining in the divine realm of Gokul, who, due to the offense of breaking the pot of yogurt that his mother was churning into butter, and then stealing the butter that was kept hanging from a swing, is quickly running from the wooden grinding mortar in fear of Mother Yasoda, but who has been caught from behind by her, who ran after him with greater speed, to that Supreme Lord, Sri Damodar, I offer my humble obeisances. So who can run faster than the Supreme Lord? Not possible. Not possible. We remember maybe that Krishna was Ranchor, the one who left the battlefield. Remember, Krishna ran away from the battlefield, and there was this Yavana king who was chasing him. And the Yavana was running at full speed, and Krishna was very casually walking. And still he could not catch up with him. Somehow or other, he kept at the same distance. He was running and running, and he kept at the same distance, wasn't getting any closer. See, that is Krishna. And of course, then we know that Krishna arranged it, that Muchukunda was sleeping there, and Muchukunda had this blessing, that because Indra used to wake him up to fight against the Asuras. So therefore, he asked for a blessing that if anyone wakes me up, that I can burn them to ashes. So Indra let him sleep. But then this Yavana woke him up and was burned to ashes, all by Krishna's arrangement. So we see how no one can run faster than Krishna. So Mother Yasoda was able to run faster than Krishna, not because she was faster than Krishna, but simply because Krishna was captured by her love. It was her love. It was not the speed. It was the love by which she captured Krishna. Seeing the stick, the whipping stick in his mother's hand, he is crying and rubbing his eyes again and again with his 2 lotus hands. His eyes are filled with fear, and the necklace of pearl around his neck, which is marked with 3 lines like a conch shell, is shaking because of his quick breathing due to crying. So now we can see how the Supreme Lord is just completely reciprocating with his devotee. For Yasoda, he becomes a child. He is the Supreme Lord, the all-powerful Supreme, but for Yasoda, he becomes like a child. He acts like a child. And she cares for him like a child. And she's teaching him like a child. But then, of course, when she saw him like that, you know, in that fear, what could she do? She could not do anything. She could not punish him. That is not possible. So in this way, because Yasoda, her only interest is Krishna's happiness and nothing but that. And she's simply thinking, I have to make sure that he doesn't become spoiled. I am giving him the best at home. Special cows that are fed special grass are producing special milk, and from this special milk, the best yogurt, the best sweets are made. And still this lusty boy, he goes to other people's houses to steal. It's incredible. Everyone is saying, oh, Nanda, your son is so wonderful. Nanda Maharaj said, he is a problem child. He is a problem child. He is stealing everywhere. Yes. So in this way, we see how much is this Damodar Lila is very wonderful. How the Supreme Lord can act like this. The same Lord who is the Ajax, Maya Ajaxena Prakriti Suyati Satcharacharam, the same one who is the controller of the whole universe, he's acting like a child. That is extraordinary. Who can imagine that? This Damodar Lila is quite extraordinary, and for 1 month we are meditating on this whole mood of Krishna. And we see that the whole meditation of the month is how to capture Krishna. How to capture Krishna. Yasoda is capturing Krishna. How can we capture Krishna? So every devotee, that is our aim, how to capture Krishna. Not how to capture money, not how to capture power, not how to capture stability in one's post, or how to capture a beautiful lady. No. Nothing of these things. Or a handsome husband. How to capture. No. None of these things. We are all interested in Krishna. And all other things should be put aside. That is the idea. When you go to Vrindavan, whatever may be, whatever, we may not be pure devotees, but in Vrindavan we must be pure. In Vrindavan you cannot do any nonsense. If you have some weakness with drinking tea, it can happen in India, right? You know, someone comes past, chai garam, chai garam, chai garam, chai, and you're alone, and it's like okay, then just garam chai, no one's watching. But not in Vrindavan. No, not possible in Vrindavan. No. Vrindavan is not for that, see? Vrindavan, if one commits nonsense in Vrindavan, then the reactions are much stronger than anywhere else. So no, in Vrindavan one must go pure. There it is said, if one is not able to be pure, then one should stay 3 days. Because 3 days everyone can manage. You know? 3 days no tea. 3 days no smoking. No bidi, nothing. Nothing. 3 days is possible. It's difficult, but can be done. Right? Even 3 days brahmachari. All right, then. 3 days brahmachari. 3 days. Pass. Okay. And then waffles. Waffles to Maya. Yes. Then back to the... So like this, Vrindavan is meant for that. It said, but one who is more serious in spiritual life, he can stay 3 months. But then 3 months must be pure. One who is very serious can stay 30 years or whole life. Like that. So Vrindavan is like that. So this month is also for that. It is a month to just be serious. And why can we not do? The Muslims are doing Ramadan, all of them. That is one thing they really do. Some may cheat a little bit, that could be. But still, they are all doing Ramadan, quite serious. They are, whatever they do, you know, they do Ramadan. Not that we care. Of course, it is eat before and eat after, that we know. And of course, we don't, the poor bakris and so on. And even cows are slaughtered, so that all is not so good. But anyway, they do their fast. They're serious about their dharma. So they get blessings for that, actually, you see. So we cannot be so weak that we say, 1 month, or how can I do 1 month? No. We can also do 1 month. So I'm just in time, just the day before, so that you can't say, I didn't know about it. Oh, I'm sorry, was it Kartik? Ah, I missed it. What to do?
Sorry, not possible. I came just in time to remind you that actually, yes, tomorrow it begins. And, so we will try. Of course, throughout the months, there will be different speakers who will speak on Kartik. We'll hear this translation. We'll read it out in the temple. We'll sing Dhammadharastika. And yes, it is very nice, sweet melody. We will enjoy it, I'm sure. Mm. Something from the Padma Purana. I'm just looking at it. So the Padma Purana is describing different things on and is saying that one must be in this month, one must follow it. It says, if one neglects to perform the Kartik Vrat, all his pious merits amassed in the past are burned to ashes. So yes, now comes the head of warning from you better take this serious. Huh? But his study of the Vedas becomes futile, and his performance of japa, charity and austerity becomes fruitless. So something we should do, huh? Glories of Kartik, Vrata. Kartik is the best, the purest of purifiers, and most glorious of all months. Kartik month is particularly dear to Lord Sri Krishna. This month is full of bhakti-vatsalya. Any vrata, even the smallest, will yield huge result. The effect of performing a Kartik vrata lasts for 100 lifetimes, whereas other vratas only last for one lifetime. As Krishna says in Gita that he is the month of November-December, similarly Srimati Radhika is the holy month of Kartik, which precedes his months. So from Padma Purana. Rupa Goswami and others refer to Radharani as the Kartik Devata or Kartik Devi. In other words, Radhika is the goddess or presiding deity of the Kartik Vrat. So we're offering the Vrat to her, and then she will offer that to Krishna. She will mention to Krishna, oh, look at this. So something we should do. Some chant extra rounds. Of course, one has to have some time. One thing one must not do is publicly announce his vrat before. I am going to... No, it's not allowed. One is not allowed to tell anyone what vrat one is going to take. One must keep that vrat privately. Only after the month is over you can tell people what you did. Of course, some may find out if you're every day sitting there reading one chapter of Bhagavad Gita, your wife may say, oh, you're every day chanting one chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's hard to hide it from the immediate family, so okay. When they find out, then all right. But not your advertising, I'm doing this. Not a lot. Mm. Yes. Yes, it says, daily offer to Lassi Arati. We're already doing. So, ghee lamp to Krishna and sing Dhammadharastikam. Bathe in Yamuna if possible. Give charity to pure devotees. Don't eat grains given by others, honey, sesame seeds, oil, hing, eggplant, loki, tasty foods like sweets and fried foods, samosas and pakoras. Anyway. Those who are very strict, they can follow that. Don't do. Cut hairs, nails, use things of others, criticize Vaishnavas, Vedas or anything. No oil on body. Do not find fault in others or be envious. Prayer before beginning. O Gopikas, by your mercy may Radha and Krishna be pleased with my Kartik Vrat. Benefits observing the Kartik Vrat. All sins flee from the heart. Perform other Vrats 100 times, not equal to one performance of Kartik Vrat. All the holy places will live within your body. proper performance of Kartik Vrat gives 1,000,000 times the result of chanting mantras, do yatras and other type of ratas. Those who worship Damodar in Vrindavan even once easily attain Krishna Bhakti. Dhruva Maharaj attained Hari Darshan by worshipping Krishna in Mathura during the Kartik months. Yeah. So, see, it is at the Dhruva, he was instructed by Narada to go to the forest and he went to Madhuvan, which is outside of Mathura in the Vraj district. And Dhruva was told to do three things. He was told to do Ashtanga Yoga. We remember he's doing this austerities, fasting, and even at one point not breathing, and so on. Then he was told to chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he was told to make a deity out of clay. So he's doing three things. He's doing fasting, chanting, and worshipping the deity. And that was his vrat. And it happened to be during Kartik. So that's great results. Anyway, this is the Padma Purana. Srila Prabhupada didn't tell us that we had to follow the Padma Purana. He didn't say, you must follow all these things exactly. Especially, he didn't emphasize that we cannot eat Hing, eggplant, Loki, tasty foods like sweet and fried food like samosas and pakoras. He didn't say that. So I will also not say to you that that is what you should do. But, alright, those who are strict, they sometimes do these things. Some are doing. Then there are the five last days of the of Kartik, and these Bhisma, Panchak, and these 5 days are is the time when one can, if one has not really done much for Kartik, then in the last 5 days one can do very strict austerities and one can still make up for that. But these are all austerities with the idea to get some benefit. You know, if you fast, you get this benefit. Whereas our mood is not so much austerity, our mood is service. Hearing, chanting, and service. So, have a samosa, but chant Hare Krishna. Yes? That's all right. So, well, any questions?
Maharaj, you said the last 5 days, you said Bhishma something.
Panchak.
Is there anything?
I don't know the full story, why it's called Bhishma Panchak. I have to look it up for you. I knew somebody would ask that. I don't know everything. Now it's exposed. I have to check. This is a punch. Yeah, well, it begins like that, and so Krishna has, on that full moon in Kartik, he is performing a Ras Lila, and then on that Ras Purnima, we are offering some sweet rice for Krishna and his gopis, so that at night they get a little fuel to keep on dancing. And they kindly leave some remnants for us, and then in the morning we distribute that to the devotees in Vrindavan. Indra Prabhu used to, on this day, get very enthusiastic. And I remember he came to my door at about 11 o'clock at night. I was sleeping, I was tired, you know, whole day hard work. I was the temple president of the Vrindavan temple. And he banged on my door, bang, 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 very loud. So it sounded like some emergency, you know, something happened. Yeah. So I jump up from the bed, what's happening? I open the door, there's Ayendra. I said, what's going on? He says, don't you know
it's Ras Purnima.
And I thought, oh my God, you know. And then he had cooked this big feast, 30 preparations, all day cooking, and invited everyone in the order to sit there at midnight and eat that feast. 30 preparations. And it had samosas, pakoras, and all those things. Oh, Krishna, Krishna. That was angel. So yes, we should do something. That's all I want to say. And especially if we can do something. Don't try to do the impossible. Just do something simple that you can maintain. Just if you can maintain it for the whole month, that is nice. If you say, I'm going to chant 64 rounds, you may last one day. And the second day, you get a sniffle or something, and then you can't do it anymore.
We basically at ISKCON we are told that we're supposed to be trying to meditate upon Radha Krishna, and here we are celebrating Damodar Leela basically. So please, this
no, but also not only Radha Krishna, it's five rasas. You read the Nectar of Devotion, you see that all the five are there. There's a lot of descriptions about Yasoda. So we're also meditating on Yasoda. Mm-hmm. Not exclusively on Radha Krishna, no. Also Nanda and Yasoda. Cowherd boys, it says in the, especially the three higher rasas are our object of meditation. Especially those. Because they are most intimate. The other ones, Santaras and Dasyaras, there's a lot of awe and reverence. You know? For example, it is stated that Krishna was joking with his coward boyfriends, but then there was one of his servants also there. So, you know, everyone was laughing, so the servant was also laughing, but then the servant, because he was a servant, was hiding it, tried to look serious. Be respectful. So yes. So, but in this higher rasas of friendship, parental mood and conjugal mood, very intimate exchanges. So these three are all our meditation. What you have in there. Scribble on the wall. How Sony came into existence.
Soul.
I would have never guessed, you know. I would have. See, the L, it goes way under the line, so I was thinking how soup came to existence. How. Soul, yeah, many things, but soul, no. The soul, it says, Natvevaham jatunisam natvamnimi janadipa natvevana bhavishyama salivi yamatāparam. Bhagavad Gita 2.13. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, and never will any of us cease to be in the future. So, the soul is eternal. So there's no beginning, there's no time when the soul was created. The soul is simply existing eternally and is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna, known as Chitkana. Chit is the spiritual Shakti of Krishna, and Kana is a particle. So it's a Chitkana, like a spark of a fire. It's always there. Then the next question is, how is the banyan tree compared to material existence? Well, and then spiritual existence. The banyan tree, it is said in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, Urdhamulam Adasakam, that the roots are pointing upwards and the branches
downwards. So where do you find such a banyan tree? You don't find. You do find. You find such a banyan tree next to a body of water as a reflection in the water. Then you'll see the banyan tree like that. So therefore, the banyan tree of material existence is a reflection of the spiritual world. This banyan tree is therefore upside down. Now, banyan trees, they have not only roots, but they create new roots from the branches, isn't it? The branches go into the ground and make new roots. And when you have a very big banyan tree, at one point you cannot figure out anymore where it began. What was the original trunk and what came later? It's just it's like a whole forest. You can walk in it, right? I think everyone has been in such a banyan tree. There is one in Navadvip, Paramatala. There you will, in Navadvip, you'll find a banyan tree. Inside they have a Durga Mandir, and you can walk through the roots into the tree. And there is one in Calcutta Botanical Gardens, which is supposed to be extremely large, very, very large. So they said that's where people get robbed. So leave the phone and all the valuables. But so the banyan tree, therefore, is representing such entanglement in the material things. One doesn't know anymore where it all began. One can no longer trace out the original root. So many air roots have also gone into the ground. And therefore, our material entanglement is like the... can you please explain the lotus feet of Krishna with the various devotional symbols in his feet? I did that the other day. At least partially I did. Huh? I did a number of them. So most have heard that. So I think I should not do it again, but very short. Thunderbolt was to smash the mountain of our insurmountable karma. My karma is so bad, I can never be a devotee. Mountain smashed. Now you can be a devotee. My mind is so strong. I have such a strong mind, I can never be a devotee. Here's the stick for controlling the elephant. Now your mind is controlled. Next. So like that. No, I can never join your Krishna consciousness because I have to take care of my family. I have a responsibility. Yes, but there is the barley corn on Krishna's lotus feet to show that he maintains his devotees. There is a swastika to show that he brings auspiciousness. Fish also is a sign of opulence on the lotus feet of Krishna. So like that, the different signs are there. Lotus flower that he's never touched. The lotus flower is not touched by the water. It runs off like that. Therefore, it's a symbol of not being touched by the, not being influenced by the material energy. Krishna can never be touched by the material energy. One who takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet is never touched by the material energy.
Maharaja, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the mantras and guide.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we understand that? Because we chant Hare
Krishna. Yes.
How do we understand?
Well, this Gayatri mantra is we also chant. But the Gayatri mantras, and there's not only one Gayatri, there are different Gayatri mantras, they are also describing the spiritual world, Gayatri mantras. So within Gayatri mantras, one can get a full understanding of the spiritual world. The only problem is that it is, one has to be qualified. One has to be in sattva gun. Therefore, it is to be chanted by qualified brahmanas and not just by anyone. And to be a qualified brahmana is extremely difficult. And therefore, in this age, It is very hard to chant the Gayatri properly. Of course, after people have chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we give them also Gayatri Mantra. Yes. After some time, they get that initiation and they chant Gayatri. But because we are not so qualified, not so sattvic in this age, Therefore, our chanting of the Gayatri is not so potent compared to the chanting in previous ages. Therefore, now, Harinama, Harinama, Eva Kevalam, we chant this Harinama. More potent, I get it. Thank you. Was Subhadra Devi, the daughter of Vasudev. It is said, yes, she is that daughter who appeared there at the time when Kamsa was thinking now Krishna is born, the eighth child. Then there was a girl, remember, because Vasudev, he went to Vrindavan and there he exchanged the boy for the girl. So was Subhadra the daughter of Vasudev or not? What is the answer? Huh? Yes? What? Vasudev went to Vrindavan and there he took the girl. Was that girl his daughter? No? Whose daughter was it?
Yasoda.
He exchanged the daughter of Yasoda for his son and placed his son under the care of Yasoda. Of course, it is said that Yasoda, in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita and other scriptures, is mentioned that Yasoda actually gave birth to twins. She had a boy and a girl. And that when Vasudev brought this boy, that the two boys became one. So therefore Krishna is also the real son of Nanda and Yasoda. That is confidential. Not everybody knows that. But that the daughter was Yasoda's, Yasoda's daughter, that's clear. And then the father cannot be Vasudev, must be... Clear. So, in this way we understand. But of course he was brought up as the daughter of Vasudev. And we find then also that later she's in Dwarka. Yes. We find that she's there in Dwarka with Krishna and Balaram, and there's a description of how they are all hankering for Vrindavan. And they become very ecstatic and then they take these forms. When Subhadra begins to speak about Vrindavan and the separation of the residents of Vrindavan, then they all become ecstatic and they take these forms of Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra. So she was there in Dwarka along with Krishna and Balaram.
After each cycle of the four yugas, is there an annihilation of the entire universe? And if it is, then how is it connected to, you know, the change of the, you know, reign of Amanu?
When, yeah.
You know, how is it?
No, there's not a full annihilation at the end of each cycle of four yugas, but a partial annihilation is there. Yeah. Then, at the time of the Manus, you get this a larger inundation, and then at the end of the day, Brahma, you get the Mahapralaya when the whole universe is being dissolved. So, something is there, but to a lesser degree at the end of the four.
What? 1,000 times in one day.
Yes.
1,000 times the four yugas come.
Sorry?
1,000 times four yugas come.
Yes, yes, yes.
Brahman,
yes.
Every 4 years.
Yes, yes. Yes, 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 yes. And like, there is at the end of, it is said at the end of Kali, Kalki comes, right? And then Kalki destroys all these demons and so on. And then after some time, then the atmosphere begins to change. Yeah? And there's a Sandhya, and Satya Yuga begins. Again, Satya Yuga comes. So there's a. So it's mainly Kalki's destruction at the end. No inundation or something.
Time's not 9 o'clock. Yes.
When the souls go back to spiritual world, even the flowers and the petals and trees and whatnot, you know, birds and everyone, mm-hmm. So they're all in the service of Krishna, and they're all satisfied as well, very happy as well. But we also say there's some special servants of Krishna and associates and like gopis or gopas and others who are more closer to Krishna. How they keep... I see that those defects come when we get in touch with the material world or when we get envious of Krishna.
Yeah.
But how they are so satisfied and happy when they're not in direct service? They must be looking at...
Well, everyone has his service, and that service is satisfying. You know? First of all, Krishna is able to reciprocate with everyone. Yeah? See, it's like now you are having the boy, and now your wife doesn't have him, so she can look at you and think, "Oh, he had now." He has the child. The parents can be... One is missing the child, and the other one has the child. Yeah? In the spiritual world, it's not like that. Because Krishna is reciprocating with everyone. When Krishna is taking prasadam with the cowherd boys, they see that he's looking at every one of them. So everyone gets the full attention of Krishna. The animals also. Krishna also, these flowers also, Krishna knows it. So Krishna, if some flower is blossoming especially for Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate. So Krishna is in relationship with every jiva. So no one is neglected. So everyone has a desire, and everyone is feeling that, yes, there is this reciprocation with Krishna. So no one feels, I'm missing out. Here always someone is feeling missing out. In the spiritual world, everyone is experiencing that, first of all, they get the attention of Krishna, and it is the most wonderful thing. Yeah? Here it's never enough. See? Here you get some attention, but it's not enough. We want more. In the spiritual world, so we're so used to this, never enough. But what else is there? There's nothing else. It's enough. It is completely satisfying. So everyone has his own rasa and wants to be that. Right? It's like Yasoda is not thinking about being a gopi. She's very happy being Yasoda. That's her mood. You know, she doesn't want to be a gopi. She wants to be Yasoda. Cowherd boys, they want to have that mood. So every living being has his mood.
They move from one form to another,
they don't desire it. In Vaikuntha, it is said they take all kinds of forms for the pleasure of Narayana. So they can do that also in Golok, but they have no desire. Because they are actually so much relishing the form they have. It's so wonderful. So the degree of relishing in the spiritual world is so high, and it's always there, all the time. Every from moment to moment. Even when they're in separation from Krishna, they're just meditating on Krishna, and their remembrance of Krishna then becomes ecstatic. So they're always from one ecstasy into the other. There's no such thing as sometimes ecstasy and the rest of the time waiting. Oh, I have to always wait. I'm just a blade of grass, and I have to wait again before Krishna finally steps on me. Oh, you have to wait. No, the grass is also meditating. So the grass is happy to meditate on Krishna. When Krishna goes through the forest of Vrindavan, all the trees begin to blossom. So you can the whole forest begins to blossom spontaneously. So all of Vrindavan is just meditating on Krishna all the time. And just his reciprocation increases that meditation. But the ecstasy is already there, from the meditation on Krishna. So it's difficult for us to understand, because we're always in a point, in a state of not satisfied. And then you get something still not really satisfied. Little satisfied. So our normal state is not satisfied. Then little satisfied. But actually not really satisfied. That's here. So it's hard to imagine the spiritual world.
Maharaj, like as you came into Krishna consciousness and you have been following this journey for many years now, so how and initially, like as you are saying, like we don't get proper imagination, we don't feel satisfied, even I don't feel. So how has been your journey? Say here, I assuming even when you started initially, like even you were not satisfied. So after coming down so many years after practicing, so. Krishna consciousness, where do you, what's your experience on this?
Well, in the beginning, I liked Krishna consciousness. I liked the deities were beautiful. The singing was very sacred. I liked it. Prasadam was attractive. I liked the books. I thought they were deep and profound. So I liked these things. The principles and all the duties, I found them difficult. Yeah, I just found that a struggle. So many duties and so many rules to follow. Initially, I struggled a bit, you know, doing all that. But then, but I had strong faith. I believed in it, so I decided, okay, I have to get serious about this. So I got more serious, and then I was not able to go in deep meditation on Krishna. Therefore, what I did was, I took responsibility for practical service. And I could understand the difference between sometimes doing service and taking responsibility. So I took responsibility from, and then the devotees gave me more and more and more. And in that, my surrender was challenged and challenged again and again, because in the course of these services I had to do all kinds of things that I would have never done. Never. But then I had to do. You know? I'm just like everyone, you know, if you start a company, then you have to surrender. You have to maybe work till midnight, right? Everyone goes home at 5, but you start a company, now you have to work till midnight because otherwise your company is finished, right? You have to surrender now. So if you take responsibility for Krishna, then you're forced to surrender. So within that surrender, the material desires have to go in the background. So they, over time then, one finds that they are diminished. Yeah? And then one can become very fixed in one's service and in wanting to surrender and so on. And then naturally, once you become very fixed in service like that, then taste begins to come, more and more taste. And such taste then goes deeper and deeper, and that way, okay, one develops genuine and deep attachment to Krishna. Then Krishna becomes one's life and soul. And then what else is there? Then it's only Krishna, 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 all day long, right? So that's the result. And, everyone will get there. It's not like, will it happen to some and not to others? No, it's not like that. I saw devotees who I thought were not so strict in the past, right? They would sometimes eat things that I would not eat. They would sometimes do things that, you know, they would not come to Mongol Arctic so much. But now I see that after so many years, they have also developed taste. So that taste will come for everyone. And once you get strong taste, for this hearing, chanting, and interest in serving Krishna, then everything becomes. From there it will take off.
Thank you. How do you compare Krishna consciousness in India and outside India? Is there any difference in?
Well, first of all, Prabhupada said that the people from India, they turned their back to Krishna. Yeah? And, you know, like I was in Connaught Circus in Delhi, and we were with the Harinam party. And people were looking like, you have to do this here, you know, in our Connaught Circus? Can you not just, like, you know, let us just enjoy a little bit now? You know, now we have to also do this religion here in our Connaught Circle. People, they want to turn away from Krishna. Yeah? They want sense enjoyment, just like the West. West is best, after all. Yeah. So that is India. Prabhupada said they turn their back to Krishna. He said, but the Westerner, they are tired of materialism, so they turn their face from Krishna. To Krishna. They turn their face to Krishna. But, it says, the Indian is closer to Krishna, but he has turned his back to Krishna. The Westerner is further away from Krishna, but he's turned his face to Krishna. So when the Indians start to again turn their face to Krishna, they already know so many things. See? Like when I speak to you about Damodar Leela and Krishna stealing butter, etc., everybody in India already likes it. You know what I mean? This is already something, everyone has some taste for that, you know. It's like, it's, oh, how nice, you know, some Westerners, what is this, you know, what is this story? Yeah? They have no taste. So in this way, the people from India have a great advantage once they turn back to Krishna. You know? Because from their culture, they got so many things. So that is good. So that is, but then again, in the West, if you want to become a devotee, it takes big surrender. You know, in my family, to dress like this, that is something, to shave my head like this, right? That is, what can I say? It borders insanity. Yeah? In India, it is just, you have become too religious, you know. That's also crazy, of course, you know. But too religious, it's your own religion, and everyone will acknowledge that, but why are you so religious, you know? You're not old yet, you know, so why would you do such a thing? You know, when you're old, all right, you know, you can, there's time enough to do these things, but not now. Huh? So in India they will also not approve, but it's within your own tradition. You know, I am like, I look like I come from another planet to my family. You understand? So for, and in the whole country where I live, it's like, you know, to walk around like this, big shock to the people. So therefore for the Western devotees, it oftentimes takes big surrender to take this step. Therefore we see that in them, that they have this seriousness, you know. And then in India, well, you know, okay, you're a good Hindu, you know what I mean, now, right, in a way. You're chanting Hare Krishna, okay, very good, it's your own religion. It's still not a complete change in life. So sometimes we see that Indian people, when they take to Krishna consciousness, have difficulty in making this, this serious commitment. Yeah, well, you know, yes, we have always been doing these things in my family. Yeah? What I'm doing, Swamiji, yes, yes.
We are trying. Yes, yes, yes. We know these things. Yes. No, but yeah, you may know, but still, Prabhupada demands a higher level of surrender than we ever did. You know, and everyone has to sort of tighten the screws a little bit. Huh? It is like if you become involved with Prabhupada's teachings, you feel like, oof, this is serious. You know? So, we must create this seriousness. Therefore, I'm happy with the educational program here in Melbourne, because I think that takes us a little deeper into understanding what we're doing. And then we cannot take it so cheap from like, yes, yes, I know all this, you know. We're talking now about bhakti. And bhakti is not just all the ritual, this and that. No, bhakti is demanding some real surrender. So it is different. It's the same culture, but it is a higher quality. And we can see that. Yeah. And therefore more satisfying. Because just the ritual doesn't really satisfy. See? And people do everything as a ritual. They go to the mandir, to some satsang, and they don't want to be there. But then Panditji gives this lecture, very dry. Everyone sits there, not interested. Yeah? But okay, you get the blessing, so you go. Because you know you need some. Because you don't know what will happen to your family if you don't have blessing. Some accident may happen. So okay, sometimes you just go. But there is no taste. But in bhakti there's taste. So yes, we want... that's why you can see that now that you became involved in this temple in Melbourne, it's different than in India. Yeah, all of you were in India also going to the temple, but you never had this level of involvement. And there is really something special. That you have here, that you don't have in India. Yeah. That is a fact. That's just because, here you are a group who is making serious commitments. Yes. And that you just don't find in every temple. Most temples just pranams, pranams. Things like some little ritual, all these kind of things. It is alright, okay, I'm joking a little bit, but no, at the same time we appreciate people's piety. It is not that I'm not appreciating, but not enough, we need more.
Last question.
I think so. Tomorrow is another day, another Mangalarti, and I'm going.
Maharaj, how can we attract the affluent and basically well-to-do Western community into Krishna consciousness?
Oof, affluent Westerners. Rich people are difficult to approach because they have many barriers between them and people, and therefore it's always very challenging, and such people must be approached within their own environment. So then we have to go through to some devotees who are more affluent themselves. They can easily penetrate. Like you can see, like Ambarish, Alfred Ford, he is like someone who can penetrate in that level. We have in the Netherlands, we have one devotee. He went into business and he now has 350 million euros. So he can meet heads of state and, and all kinds of influential people. When he gives a public lecture, they come the prime minister is happy to, you know, hear what he has to say. And they know he's Hare Krishna, but they don't mind. With 350 million, you can be Hare Krishna. No problem. Very interesting, yes. Tell us more about it.
But also, you know, I'm not talking about the well-to-do, sort of those people. People who are basically, like, I mean, very well-educated and basically doing good jobs. And I find it, I mean, difficult to actually discuss it at the level where...
You know, we have a problem. That people from India, they come from a different culture, and people from the West come from a different culture, and we have these devotees, and we are trying to preach to both, and it's sometimes difficult to mix the two, because they have a different mood. Yes. Yeah? And if we bring some Westerner into a completely Indian program, they may feel like, what is this, you know, they cannot immediately relate. Right? And it's so we see... Not that we are caste conscious or anything like that. It's not that, eh? But it's just different cultures, and it's not always easy to mix the cultures. And we find that also in our temples. Yeah? This is a problem. Yeah. So sometimes we need special programs for new Western people. Once they become more experienced, and then it's all right, then we can all chant Hare Krishna together and everything fine. But in the beginning, they cannot relate to the Indian way, and so that's why we have some different programs. For young Western people, we have the urban yoga, and then for, you know, more established people. See, Gopals is a good thing for them, you know. Working class people, educated working class people, they don't mind going to Gopals. Mm. That's okay. That's the kind of thing they can handle. You have some privacy. You can show. You can be a little interested, but you're paying, so they cannot preach to you too much. So it's safe. Yeah. If you come to the temple and you get your free meal, it's dangerous because then they can preach to you. Yeah. But in a restaurant, they cannot because you're paying. So, you know, so they have to leave you alone. But at the same time, you can check it out. So. That is safe. So Western people, they are afraid. Like today we went to the Melbourne University, and the audience was quite reserved. Right? I mean, I give many university lectures, but this group, I could see they still have quite some fear. So I had to spend some time, you know, just breaking down barriers and making them feel comfortable, and, you know, sort of carefully indicating, but yes, you don't have to become a Hare Krishna. That's not our agenda. You know, but we want you to get to know more about Vedic culture. It's a good culture. The West can use it. So not so threatening if you just say to them, you know, can you also pray? I was once in a program, and Bhakti Charu, it was with all Western people, and Bhakti Charu Maharaj was doing the program in Amsterdam. And at one point, you know, he says to all these Western people, and now fold your hands, and now we're going to pray. Now, in Europe, right, usually you can't do that with people. Yeah? You're careful, you know, you don't say pray. The word pray, you don't say that. The word God, you don't say that too much. They don't like that too much in the lecture. A little bit, you know, but not 20 times God in the lecture, 20 times a word like pray. And Bhakti Charu Maharaj says, now everyone, just fold your hands. And because he was an Indian guru, they all did it. They would have never done it. If I would have said it, they would have never done it. Right? Never. But because he was Indian, they just did it. And suddenly you see all these atheistic people who come, you know, praying. Like they never pray in their life, you know. But suddenly they were praying, right? So they are allergic to these things. Yeah? If you say too much God, they are like, whoa, you know, you're trying to convert me. You know? Yeah? So they have to be more careful. You cannot be so direct and say,
God and praying, all these words. That's why they like words like yoga and meditation. Instead of praying, you say meditation, you know, like that. Instead of religion, you say yoga. Yeah. You know. They like, you have to use the other words. Anything religious, they are a little allergic. Yeah. The church has been very heavy on the people for hundreds of years. You know, you're going to hell if you don't pay your donations or you will burn and burn and burn. So people have turned away from the churches. They're allergic for religion. It's not just that they're outright atheists. The church has made them into atheists by heavy preaching. So they're allergic to religious words and so on. But if you are a yogi from India, you know meditation. Very interesting. But if you speak about God and prayer, like that. Okay, it is 9:30. We have another day tomorrow. We want to escape.